six and you're all charismatics. You're all charismatics. Sneaking in the back door with dirty magazines. Tell your mother wants to know what all the stains from your jeans. And you're all charismatics. You're all charismatics. You're getting that soap, but you still keep it beating. You meet your pulp and you're no charismatics. African Discord.
Up next on Free Radio, Bathrobs Piers Broadsides, two-hour show covering local civil rights activities, particular focus on Spygate. Stay tuned.
Little frisk like you see in front of a club. I'm talking about a real motherfucking frisk. Like
And welcome to Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides. This is Robert Norris, actually, and I am with you for the next 2 hours. I kind of hope to have a co-host on this show. In fact, I advertised it as such on Indie Bay, which is the new indie media location for those of you who want to post and read about local events, post stories on local events and read about them. And it's a good place to go. My co-host has not arrived, so perhaps that will happen later, or perhaps I will just have to be my own co-host, which has happened before. You can also reach me by calling me at 427-3772, and that's the show. And you can speak to the community, too, that way, which is really the point. Call in if you want to comment on any issues that come up on this show or demand that some issues come up that aren't here. You can also go to pagesincolor.com, which I'm doing right now. And it's a website and a chat room that is increasingly looks like an appendix or an unused appendage, but perhaps, who knows, perhaps it'll be used tonight. It's a place you can go in case the phone is busy or in case you have, I don't know, stuff that's longer that you want to post, or perhaps you don't like the sound of your own voice on the air. I don't know, whatever reason you might have. Sometimes this phone line people do call in every so often. There's also a second line, which I'll announce when that happens, so there actually will be two lines. But sometimes it happens it's more convenient for people to talk on the chat room, and that's Pages in Color, all one word, small letters. Actually, I think the first letter is capitalized, doesn't really matter. And you can chat, and I'll keep an occasional eye on that. I'm going to begin with a few of the final, not really final, but the last that I have of Coral Brune's interviews, which she made while I was away on vacation in January. They're getting a little dated, but they're not that dated yet, and I'm going to make commentary on them to bring them up to date. And while she speaks, you're going to be able to know the behind the scenes. I'm preparing even more exciting adventures for all of you on the radio, so stay tuned.
Hi, I'm with Mike, and he wants to talk about Food Not Bombs.
Yes, this is Mike from Food Not Bombs. I got out of jail about, I'd say it was a month ago, and I was told through the grapevine that Food Not Bombs was happening here and there, and that it kind of boiled down to, like, you know, one person, and no one wanted to do it, and kind of felt, you know, just the, not just the obligation, just kind of like the, just felt the energy to really get Food Not Bombs, Santa Cruz, back on its feet. And we put out a flyer and kind of like a call to the community that we really needed some input, some community involvement. And we did a meeting about, I think it was about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, in the back of Loudon Nelson about needing volunteers. And we had a very large input from the community about, let's say, between 20 to 22 people came to the meeting. It was very, very surprised. I would say half of the people I didn't even know, and it's actually been taking off extremely well. Over 6-7 volunteers now show up for each session. There's been lots of donations, you know, from spices to oil, to serving containers, to a lot of commitment, which is great. Food Not Bomb Santa Cruz, we're back Sundays and Wednesdays for a start. We're going to be doing 5 days a week extremely soon, ideally 7 days a week by next month or a couple months. We're doing great. We're up on 106 Younger Way, which is up on Beach Hill. Pretty soon we're going to be looking for a permanent location. If anyone out there has any backyard space or a very permanent space they'd like to have Food Not Bombs, would want to welcome Food Not Bombs to have 7 days a week or a couple days a week. It would be fantastic because we're going to be looking for a new space this upcoming June because our space on Beach Hill will no longer be there. And, yeah, we're good. If anyone else would like to help volunteer, you know, the more people, the merrier. We start up on 106 Younger Way at 12 noon, Sundays and Wednesdays. And, yeah, you know, we're always looking for people. But yeah, we're back. And, the community involvement and the community of Santa Cruz, you've definitely put this great, wonderful organization back into action, back into liveliness, and we thank you for that.
I couldn't have said anything better. Thank you, Mike.
And a brief update. I went to a Food Not Bombs organizing meeting, which was kind of widely advertised, or at least I advertised it myself on this show, and I think it was advertised online. And unfortunately, Mike and I were the only ones to be at that meeting. That was last Saturday, was it, I believe? Friday, last Friday. And that was in San Lorenzo Park. Wow, I really hope that people do get involved with Food Not Bombs. I know that there currently is another threat to Food Not Bombs' Wednesday serving place, which is at the parking lot next to the farmer's market. That usually happens at 4 o'clock. And what's cooking is the Downtown Commission has apparently on its fast track a proposal I've talked about on the air before to make it illegal to loiter for more than 10 minutes in a parking lot or parking garage without a permit, which means not only will you get wet if you're homeless and you want to come out of the rain and stand under the garage overhang, not only will you not be able to play music if you're a musician CJ across from Clouds, half a block from Pacific Avenue, but if you're a Food Not Bombs customer or a Food Not Bombs server, you will be told you have to either get a permit or leave. And in fact, I guess you can't really get a permit if you're a customer. I guess if you're a part of that event, it's possible. I know that Food Not Bombs in San Francisco and in Santa Cruz historically has declined to go through the permit process because it often is a prelude to a shutdown. It's a way of not only is it a violation of kind of a freedom of assembly notion. There's no need to get a permit. There's no problem with Food Not Bombs serving in the parking lot area. People gather there. They still allow cars to go through. It isn't a difficulty. But it's also a situation where in San Francisco, they used the need for a permit as the excuse to get rid of Food Not Bombs, which they tried to. And they made over 1,000 arrests. I served a month in jail up there around that whole thing. In a bogus conviction for serving food without a permit. So I think Food Not Bombs activists and those who are concerned with the need for Food Not Bombs here in Santa Cruz, or just the need to have access to Food Not Bombs, or for others to have access to it, should be concerned about this. You can call for more information. You can get a hold of the Downtown Commission. Their number, I, of course, don't have immediately with me. I'll try to get it for you later in the show. The city council will ultimately vote on this ordinance, and I'm afraid will rubber stamp it faster than you can snap your fingers if it ever gets there. It's been delayed for a while because some of us spoke up at the last Downtown Commission meeting, and we're going to be playing more of that on Sunday. Actually, Sunday is going to be a really busy day on the show. I come back between 9:30 and 1. It's a long show, and I'm going to be playing a number of things, including the interview that I did with Mayor Cynthia Matthews, Santa Cruz Mayor, and also... Let me make sure I got my schedule right here. Let me see here. We're going to be hearing a little from Cynthia Matthews today in about an hour and a half at 7:30. At 6:30, I'm going to begin playing Public Safety Committee stuff around what I described briefly before as Spygate, the Santa Cruz Police Department's surveillance operation against peaceful demonstrators on New Year's Eve. Apparently... backed up by the mayor, the city manager, the city council. Although, you know, I mean, Mayor Matthews denied that she had any knowledge of what went on, but when I asked her if it was okay for that kind of stuff to continue, she didn't seem to have any problem with the quickie poo guidelines that Chief Howard Scarry put together a week ago today after Deputy Chief's investigation of himself came out and then, of course, was rejected by the police auditor, Bob Aronson. Anyway, what's happening on Sunday at 10 o'clock? There's going to be the Matthews interview. At 11 o'clock, I'm going to play some more of the Downtown Commission's discussion of both the downtown ordinances and this obnoxious and abusive ordinance. It's another one of these gentrification, give the police more power, scare away the poor people ordinances, which is just a disgrace to our town, frankly. That's going to be at 11 o'clock. And then I also have an interview with Lisa Mullineaux of Greenway. I went there today to kind of check on what's been happening and talk to her for 15, 20 minutes, maybe longer. I'll be playing that interview probably as well on Sunday. So there's going to be a lot of interviews coming up on Sunday. This evening we have Paul Sanford scheduled to either be calling in or else we're going to call him at home or wherever he happens to be. Paul Sanford is the man who, with John Maurer, challenged the downtown ordinance that is kind of chronicled, has been chronicled in Good Times at a number of points. Fuck the pigs sign in a homeless man John Maurer's hat after he'd been harassed by police repeatedly on Pacific Avenue by his account. Police then harassed him further by deciding the First Amendment didn't apply to him. They were going to cite him for panhandling because he was gathering pennies and coins, encouraging people to give him pennies and coins while he had this little sign in his hat. They claimed that was profane and abusive language. Of course, it wasn't. It was simply a message about the police department and what he thought about them. And in a way, it was an encouragement for the community to become aware of exactly what the police department is doing with the unusual powers granted it by the city council under the downtown ordinances, which I've talked about and complained about at length, and which are touched on to some extent in the article by Hunter Holcomb a week ago in the Good Times, and also referred to in this week's, today actually is when it came out, this today's issue of the Good Times, when there are two letters essentially supporting the downtown ordinances without really describing what they are, of course, because any fool who reads them knows that there's some blank check for the police department to run over and do whatever they feel like doing, as, for example, they did to Brandon, the cellist, who was taken away in handcuffs about 2 weeks ago, he was going to be held for a month until he posted bail, as by his account. I don't know, maybe he would have been arraigned and released, maybe his bail would have been reduced, but it was between $500 and $600. I actually now here have an interview with Brandon, which I'm going to play. I don't know how much of it I'm going to be able to play because I am going to try to start. In fact, you know, I think I'm going to wait on the Brandon interview because I think it really deserves to be played in its entirety, and I think I will try to do that on Sunday too. Brandon has been released. He is playing the cello. He's not in very good spirits, although he's described in this Downtown Ordinances article as seems to be content, which shows you just how deeply Hunter Holcomb inquired into this whole situation, or the photographer, or whoever wrote the caption on that particular picture. Let me see if I have that article with me. Usually I, of course, carry the wrong articles around, but sometimes I actually make it and find the right articles. I have the letters that were in the paper. Oh, yes, I actually do have the article. I'll talk about that a little bit. Again, you're invited to call in if you have any thoughts or concerns, 427-3772. I've written a letter to the Good Times, which I emailed to the editor, Greg Archer, who perennially cuts back my letters, or makes me do that. And I think I may put it on the Good Times website, which also has, if you go online, you can find the Good Times, which is, of course, a Santa Cruz weekly, a free weekly. You can find it around, mostly concerned with which rock bands are playing around town and which restaurants are putting in coupons and that sort of thing. But they also have a few stories. And I've got to admit, although he doesn't say what I would say, and he doesn't explore the issues as deeply as I hoped he would, I don't really hope people do, but I would love to see it happen. He does talk about the issues over a fairly long article. The article is titled Law and Disorder. There's a number of small errors in here. I made a number of notes. He quotes former mayor and current city council member and what I call the shadow mayor, Mike Rotkin, the guy who really runs the city council. Of course, the city manager really runs the city, Dick Wilson, city manager for life, as I describe him, both publicly and privately. Not that he's not a nice guy. I don't even know if he's a nice guy or not. I don't know him personally at all. I know he's a very well-dressed man running around in a business suit who has no accountability, apparently, whatsoever. he can allow an absurd pseudo investigation to go ahead. And we're going to be talking about, we're going to be listening to people discuss that at this public safety committee meeting or public insecurity committee. This is the city council that we're going to be looking at soon. The city council subcommittee headed by Mike Rotkin. Dick Wilson is the guy with the power in town. He appoints the police chief. He appoints the department heads. He appoints the staff. And he's been around since 1984. Council members, they may cycle in and out. It's hard to say they come and go because they keep seeming to be coming back. But we have Dick Wilson is forever. So is John Barisoni, apparently, our city attorney. The article in the paper, The Good Times, on the downtown ordinances fundamentally talks about a couple of things. It discusses an incident that happened with James Ney and myself. Looks like I turned off the ringer, and now I'm turning it on again. Let me take this phone call, and we'll continue with this whole discussion. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
This is John Golder, and I'm trying to, I was supposed to meet Robert.
Yeah, you certainly were, you dog. You didn't show
up.
Well,
I was out walking my dog. I left a note on my car here at the 7-11.
Oh, bummer. Okay, well, let me talk to you in a moment.
Well, I need to find out where you guys are. So,
yes. Well, you know, our secret location can never be revealed, but I'll reveal it to you in a moment. Let me provide a little musical cover here, and
okay. And
we'll talk. Hang on. And listeners, be patient with me.
Okay.
Here on a beautiful sunlit day, Santa Cruz, speaking with Dennis. Dennis, what's going on, and how did you like that open mic?
Well, I think it, especially the space, acoustically, spatially and acoustically, is really nice. It's got a low ceiling, and it's small enough to so the music and singing don't get lost in the large cavernous. It's not large and cavernous. Likewise,
we're referring to the new bike church.
Yes, we're referring to the bike church venue for folk music. Largely what happened was guitar and singing. There was some other things. There was a guy playing a flute for a while. That was White Owl from Austin. And anyway, I was going to say, and I did say then, I appreciated the acoustic nature of the possibilities. There was a mic there if you wanted to use it. I chose not to because I am that kind of person. I think acoustic is just fine as long as it's loud, you know, loud enough for the space. And as I say, and it was big enough to accommodate a few dozen people. There were probably maybe 30 people at one time, weren't there, in there? Two or three dozen people.
Someone told me they thought 50 people were in there.
Well, I didn't count, but I guess if they crammed them back among the spare tires. I kept wanting to do something to do with cycle, you know, to do a little discourse on cycle, because a lot of people don't know, for example, and this is a little etymological discourse on the word cycle. Turns out it is, in fact, the exact same word as wheel through the Greek line. And wheel comes through the Germanic line into English. And it's also the same word as the word chakra, which we borrow from Sanskrit into English. A lot of people say chakra instead of chakra, but that means wheel also. So those seven centers up and down the kundalini body are actually wheels, literally speaking, but metaphorically speaking, of course. So each one of those, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, they're turning, right? There's some kind of a turningness to what's going on there. Isn't that neat, Coral?
Yeah, it reminds me of an old album I used to listen to.
Well, yes, albums go around and around like wheels, don't they?
Yes.
They're rotary. And rota is the word for wheel in Spanish, but it doesn't seem to be the same. It's not cognate. It doesn't come from the same ancient root. But the ancient root is something like kuklos, like in Kukla, Fran, and Ollie. You know,
is it?
Yeah. Well, it's the same. The Greek is kuklos, and the Indo-European is something pretty close to that too. So kukla, as in Kukla, Fran, and Ollie, might be cognate with chakra. Isn't that neat?
It was good how you were able to
And these are the archival moments that we love so much. That, in fact, it was Coral, and I think we may have a little more on this tape. Let's see what she's got.
Could possibly know that this was one of the recommendations for their legislative program. This is Councilmember Fitzmaurice Alton, please.
And I'm afraid we've run into a city council tape. I don't want to impose that one on you. So hang tough here, and let's take a moment to hear a brief musical number from that Chilean group, which you may have heard on the mall. It really is pretty good. It's called Mañana Me Chanto, which means tomorrow I quit. And they've got some songs in English and in Spanish. Here's a little something in English called Working Man, I think, if I got the right track.
I don't wanna be part of the working man society. I don't wanna be part of the working man society. I don't wanna be part of the working man society. I don't wanna be part of the working man society. smells like work. Let's get out of here.
Dejé mi tierra natal muchos años atrás, con la gran ilusión de nuestro mundo conocer. Me escapé de la tele y lo que me quería mostrar, yo sabía que eran cuentos, lo tuve que comprobar. No tengo dinero, solo tengo música para regalar. No tengo dinero, solo tengo música para entregar. Ay, ay. No tengo dinero, solo tengo música para regalar. No tengo dinero, solo tengo música para entregar.
Generally, I just sleep around my phone. bring me to the next train. I got a mouth to say, hey sir, I got no tickets. Please let me explain. Now come on, you won't gonna kick me out of the train, won't you?
Tengo dinero, solo tengo música para regalar. No tengo dinero, solo tengo música para bailar. No tengo dinero, solo tengo música para regalar. No tengo dinero, solo tengo música para entregar. No tengo dinero, solo tengo música para regalar. No tengo dinero, solo tengo música para entregar. Ay, ay,
tampoco lo quiero.
No tengo dinero, solo tengo música para regalar. No tengo dinero, solo tengo música para entregar.
And that was Mañana Mi Chanto. And in the studio with us, its co-host and special guest, back from Arizona and points east and still at liberty in spite of the city manager, Yon Golder, also now calling himself Johnny G. How you doing there, Yon?
Hi, Robert. How are you?
Hi, Robert.
You didn't bring your dog BW with you.
Oh, no, he's on guard.
Okay, well, make sure that the police chief doesn't start surveilling your pooch. Oh, no. Speaking of which, I'm now going to play and go move directly to what I promised on IndieBay.org, which I posted earlier. This is a tape which contains the Public Safety Committee hearing, which you were at, Yon, as was I, plus a little preliminary discussions that I had with a few of the folks there, plus an interview with Bob Aronson, the police auditor. If we can get all that in, let's see if we can do that. Plus, of course, your analysis, which you're a man who's had experiences and a half with the city. We've talked about some of these on the air some years ago, but you've learned more since. We won't be able to talk about a lot of that today, but we'll be able to get perhaps a few poignant and pungent and, you know, there'll be pregnant comments from you. So does that sound good? What do you think?
It sounds good to me.
All right, here we go. This, again, is the Public Safety Committee meeting, which is a committee of the City Council, which replaced the Citizens Police Review Board. It is headed by Mike Rotkin. I think I actually described this in the tape, so I'm going to proceed. You get to hear me babbling away even when I'm not in person here in the studio.
Well, it's nearing 4 o'clock at City Hall on Monday, February 13th. About a dozen people here. Hey, Sherry. A couple of signs. Investigating ourselves. Unbiased, unofficial report of the last night. DIY and organizers. Thorough internal investigation. We didn't do anything wrong. The police say we did. See number one. And we have smattering of folks here. Hey, Bob Patton. What's happening, Bob? How long have you been here?
Too long.
Well, I just got here at the end of the protest. Started at 2.
I just got here 5 minutes ago. I had to work today, so it was a pretty intense day.
We've got the Mercury News. We've got Louis LaFortune. We've got Rico. We have Indie Media and some other folks here. Are you with Indie Media or just an observer? I could be subversive in these times, so we'll keep an eye on you. So has anybody else showed up here, Bradley, other than the small group we now see here?
Yeah, there's been other folks.
Like a larger group? Or
there wasn't a tremendous outpouring, no.
It's the afternoon.
Yep.
20 or 30, that's not bad.
No, he's guessing.
Oh, that's right, he wasn't here. 2 or 3.
You said a few people or some people.
15.
But we have about 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 13, 14. About maybe 15 now if we count the folks inside. There's one ex-mayor here.
A bunch of people are presenting and a bunch of people are taking pictures. There wasn't too many people in the middle.
So we're talking about not the city council, but the critics of the city council, right?
Well, at the press conference before, there were some people that were giving the press conference, and there were some people that were covering the press conference.
And there were two people watching the press conference?
Right. There wasn't that many people that weren't in either of those camps.
How long did the press conference take, and more or less what happened? Any quick
time? Started around 2, and I guess it's still going. Look at this. We're making our own press.
Well, where the police department is doing it for us. I mean, look at it that way. Thanks, Brad.
You can see Graham's 600-page report there.
Right, that's the report. Is that the revised report after it was taken from the library yesterday and, should we say, dealt with by the city manager's office, or is this a new?
I didn't hear what happened.
Yeah, I went to the library earlier today to find out what was cooking. They didn't have the report. They said it had been taken from them. I went to the city council office and said it was being revised. So we have the updated version, perhaps.
Being censored.
No, certainly not. Terry, have you looked at the revised report compared with the original report?
Have I looked at
that report was taken out of the library and changed by the city managers. I don't know if it was redacted or just revised.
I heard that they were crossing out the names of officers, that they have a right to privacy, and they weren't supposed to have their names in certain parts of the report.
The POA is at it again.
Police have privacy, citizens.
I don't know. Well, get it online quick. I'm going to go in.
Yeah, actually, we have a copy of it, but. Bob Aronson, who's the independent auditor. Bob, you've been on this job for, 3 years now, this particular job?
Yes, I believe that's correct.
They cut your salary in half after the first year, or is that not accurate?
I don't think it was in half, but it was a substantial reduction, which primarily eliminated my public hours.
And you have, however, reviewed every internal affairs investigation that's come up in the last 3 years?
Yes.
And how many does that amount to?
Good question. Had I been...
Hundreds, dozens, ten.
Oh, it's under 100 in the past 3 years.
How many of those, in your recollection, what percentage were sustained? Do you know?
Oh, I couldn't tell you that. I could tell you that in 80% of them I found issues that were problematic.
But... The actual number sustained was around 80% as well? Or?
No, I don't recall what percentage was sustained.
I mean unsustained.
I don't collect that sort of statistics, so I couldn't tell you.
So you didn't get an overall impression of whether this department is any more concerned about its police than, say, other departments in terms of the percentage of sustained complaints?
Well, that's not a way to judge the extent to which a department is concerned or not, whether they're sustained. Each investigation gets judged on its own.
Thanks, Bob. Bob Aronson, independent auditor.
And that's a brief commentary. I kind of nabbed Bob before the meeting began, but we're going to be hearing a longer interview with him after the meeting is over. Again, there weren't very many people in the audience, probably about 10 or 15. It was, of course, held during the day, so necessarily that limited the turnout. And although there was a lot of media that showed up for the 2 o'clock protest, which turned out to be mainly a kind of a press conference / protest, as I understand it. Jan, were you at the actual protest at 2 o'clock?
For part of it, yeah.
And how did that go? Any police officials show up? Any city officials?
I didn't see any police officials, and I don't believe any city officials actually identified themselves if they were there.
You know, it's interesting. No police officer showed up at this public safety committee meeting at all that I saw. I didn't notice any in the audience.
No, in fact, I believe Mike Grotkin announced that there were no police there.
Right.
And it's their duty to come to that meeting.
Well, we might overwhelm the public safety committee and take over the process.
Well, it's just...
Where am I dreaming here?
They're supposed to be there to just like...
their staff, actually.
Any other department, you know, that's being reviewed and its actions are being reviewed, sends a representative to the meeting, city council people. And since there were certainly problems with the report, I'm certain that the media would have liked to talk to the cops.
Well, I also noticed when looking at the Public Safety Committee minutes from the last year, the April 18th meeting, present Deputy Chief of Police Kevin Vogel, the May 16th meeting, present Police Chief Howard Scarry as staff, the Public Safety Committee meeting of Tuesday, July 19th. Present staff, Police Chief Howard Scarry, Deputy Police Chief Kevin Vogel, Assistant City Manager Martine Bernal. Again, continuing with the minutes, October 17th. At that meeting, however, there was only a staff member present, Tina Scholl from the city manager's office. However, at the November 21st meeting, there was Fire Chief Ron Prince, Deputy Police Chief Kevin Vogel, Tina Scholl. And so it looks like at least at all but meetings but one of the Public Safety Committee last year, they had either the police chief or the deputy police chief, you know, who there. It seems kind of peculiar that nobody showed up to this meeting at which... It almost seems as though they had an arrangement beforehand. Am I being too paranoid here?
Well, no, you may be actually poking at the truth there, Robert. I think that there, somebody must have tipped somebody off. We're not naming names here, but we know who the cast of characters are. And certainly the fact that there was a lot of media there and the fact that I believe that the police knew what was before the meeting what was going to be said about the report. They just basically didn't want to face the music.
There was, I guess, at least one TV station, several radio stations, indie media. I, of course, was there with my trusty tape recorder.
There was at least five reporters from different papers.
There's a Metro Santa Cruz, San Jose Mercury News reporter was there, and I believe there may have been a Good Times reporter, though I'm not
sure.
There
was a Good Times reporter there, and there was a indie media. Yeah, you said indie media, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah.
And I note that this, of course, was the day after... Well, the headline in the paper the next day was Auditor Slams Police Report. And, of course, this was the auditor, Bob Aronson, saying that, you know, you can't send the deputy chief to investigate himself, obviously. And then we had the rather interesting excuse, well, we didn't have enough staff to do otherwise.
That's not what Scarry said was, that, if I'm correct in what the report, what the yesterday's paper said, is that there was only two people of the rank capable of
right,
doing this investigation,
and
Saponi was on vacation for 3 weeks, and they needed a report right away. What I don't understand, what's problematical here, is that the police chief didn't call back Wilson and tell him that he had a problem.
We obviously need the emails here to find out who called who, and unless they've been shredded at this point. There has been a request made. I've made a request to the city manager's office for... Actually, I haven't made this request. I believe Rico Thunder has made this request through the ACLU, and part of the emails have been revealed, and the second request is now in the process of being either ignored or responded to. I find it extremely peculiar that no police officials were present at this meeting. In fact, it's A, disrespectful to the public, and B, it indicates some kind of a collusion with the subcommittee because the Public Safety Committee meeting, because that's their standard process, to have a police official there.
Police and fire. And most of the meetings I went to previous, which was years ago, it was the police chief, a fire chief, or one of their higher-ranking staff, mm-hmm. and the three city council people.
Right. So it seems to me like this is one of Rotkin's scenarios where he wanted to close everything down as quickly as possible, say, well, Bob Aronson found that our investigation was inadequate, therefore we're going to send Bob back to do a better investigation, and we'll shut up about it until the report comes back. That was the scenario Rotkin pushed forward. That was what Matthews, the mayor, accepted the next day in removing the item from the agenda, though apparently she took her time doing it. I kept calling City Hall the next day to find out, is item 35, the report from Kevin Vogel, the deputy police chief, on the spying at New Year's at the last night parade, on the agenda? And he kept saying, well, they're not sure yet. And this went on until about 2:30 in the afternoon. Let's hear some of the Public Safety Committee meeting, unless you got something more you want to say about this.
Well, I just, you were right in your comments before the committee that it's another one of the tactics the city council uses when the people find out through the news media and through the grapevine that something is going to be addressed on a meeting, and they take their time off to come and address it, and it looks like it's going to be too hot to handle, then they table it or postpone it or give some excuse to not address it, and that's exactly what they did.
Right. The question, of course, is how can we deal with this? I suggest we need parallel institutions that proceed regardless of the bullshit of the city council and their allied I don't want to say they're allied friends in the police department. The police department, I think, is really the power here that may be calling the shots. The city council seems to be responding to events rather than addressing them. Let's hear a little more from the Public Safety Committee hearing, which I recorded on this rather shabby equipment. I apologize that we only have this, but you see, the Public Safety Committee does not keep an audio record of its own meetings. You can't go to the library and hear this. This is the only place, unless you catch snatches of it from indie media or from the news media, you'll actually be able to hear this. So I want to remind anybody listening, and you're tuned to Free Radio at 101.1 FM, in case you didn't know. Also, we're broadcasting at freakradio.org. That this is archived. If you want to listen to this again, you can go to Huff Santa Cruz, all one word, all small letters, HUFFSantaCruz.org. Huff is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.
Okay, we'll take a second to get together technically now.
Now, the three members of the Public Safety Committee, you'll be hearing them occasionally talking, though, again, they tried to cut this meeting short very quickly, was Chair Mike Rotkin, Councilmember Ryan Coonerty, and Councilmember Ed Porter.
Sorry.
We know that's in camera and not a gun. You're okay up here. Ready to go there?
Okay.
Good afternoon. I'm Mike Blackman, the chair of the City Council Public Safety Committee, and with me are Ed Porter and Ryan Coonerty, members of the committee. We have an agenda set for this afternoon, but we're going to see a change in what we have planned. On the back window, if you haven't received one yet, is a copy of a very, very brief one page with a couple lines on the other side by Robert Aronson, the independent police auditor for the city of Santa Cruz, an audit review of the last night do-it-yourself internal investigation. I suggest people get a hold of that. Because of we were hoping to have comments from Mr. Aronson about in which he would give us a review of the police study of what had happened on first night and policy issues and so forth growing out of that. If you read his comment, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but it's possible to be more brief, and thank you for being as brief as you were there. He basically finds the investigation inadequate and intends to carry on further investigation before he's prepared to give any report to this committee. This committee is intending to eventually, we were hoping it was going to be tomorrow, give a report to the city council for their possible action on policy issues and other stuff growing out of this whole incident or set of incidents. And at this point, it doesn't make sense, I don't think, for us to proceed with a full discussion of what happened, what should be done about it, what the policy should be, until we actually have a final report in front of us from Mr. Aronson.
I'm going to comment here. I'm going to refer to a couple of documents which people may not have seen because you weren't at the Public Safety Committee meeting. Only a few of us were. The meeting agenda has six items on it: call to order introductions, police report on events leading up to New Year's Eve 2005, item 3, discussion of police surveillance policies. This is subdivided into four sections: 1, existing policies and policy application; 2, officer behavior; 3, use of gathered information; 4, independent police auditor comments if available; and then 4, discussion and approval of police surveillance policy recommendations. The approved policy recommendations will be brought to the City Council at its February 14th meeting the next day; 5, communication from council members; and then 6, public comment for items not on the agenda. This was the agenda under the Brown Act that they are required to post and go by, because they are an official and standing permanent committee of the City Council. They announce this agenda at least 72 hours in advance. What do they do when we show up there? They eliminate all the items on the agenda, pretty much, is what they did. We didn't get a police report on events leading up to New Year's Eve, and you might say, well, you know, but the report was not found to be adequate by the auditor. That shouldn't make any difference. Whether the report was found adequate or inadequate, the police did their investigation. They should come and make their account to the community based on what they feel is adequate. If they are exposed as a bunch of lying cover-up artists, well, that's how the chips will fall. And that's how city council should allow the chips to fall. They, the city council, determined the schedule for this to happen. They put it on the agenda. The police are there supposedly to respond on that agenda as they, you know, on their timetable. And yet Rotkin attempts to steamroll and co-opt the entire process because he sees that the police department has really fucked up big time. And, of course, Rotkin is a cover-up artist for the police department, I'm afraid. That's the story. His excuse, of course, is that he's doing it because Bob Aronson isn't ready to do his report. Bob Aronson never said such a thing to me, either in the interview prior, in the interview after, or during this entire time. Bob Aronson showed up to make his report. He read the report over the weekend. He was supposed to comment on what he read. He was not allowed to do so by the chair of the subcommittee, Shadow Mayor Mike Rotkin. Any comments, Yon?
Well, that's pretty accurate, Robert. That's right. You know, the committee has the duty to look into this. They have it on an agenda. It's all planned ahead of time. What's supposed to happen, there was late breaking news because of Bob's report. Bob's
letter, which I'm going to read.
Bob's letter that basically said that the report was the main words he used, it didn't even meet
incomplete and flawed.
Incomplete and flawed didn't meet the most basic precept of an independent of an investigation.
The point here is, I'm talking, and you, I think, are also talking about the fact the form here is the police are supposed to give their report, Bob is supposed to give his report, and then we, the public, and they, the council, can make judgments as to what we do next. Instead, Rotkin decides to shut everything down and delay everything. I mean, I was upset by this when it happened because I thought this means that we're going to get Howard Scarry's makeshift guidelines. He's our police chief. That he suddenly made up some guidelines last Thursday, a week ago, about how police cannot surveil people. And instead of getting city council guidelines, we are getting Scarry's guidelines. Now, Rotkin knew beforehand that he would only have one day to prepare these recommendations. He knew the city council meeting was the next day. He set this agenda. He wrote this agenda. He's the chair of the Public Safety Committee. So what is he doing? Well, we know what he's doing, but I'll ask the question. I mean, we don't know what he's doing, but I'm afraid there's a strong suspicion here that there's some hanky-panky going down. At least that's my view.
Well, Rotkin commented that he felt that he didn't have enough information to be able to go forward and make his recommendations. Certainly that was true, that they didn't have a whole lot of information, though each one of them had the investigation. Each one of the safety council members had the investigation to look at on their own. And they certainly could, and the public comment, which Rotkin tried to limit
He did limit it.
Well, he did limit it, even though he was wiping out the agenda. Everybody basically said, let's hear what you have to say. Let's get on the ball, make some recommendations. There was a lot of comment there for the committee to move forward. Tony Madrigal, in his comments on the matter, basically disqualified the committee from being capable of doing anything. He said, well, I'm a bookseller.
You're talking about Ryan Coonerty.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. Okay. I keep getting the two mixed up.
Before you get into that, because I'm going to play that, and then why don't we comment on that at that time? My point is that if Rotkin wanted to say we can't act on these recommendations, that would come under agenda item 4. Rotkin was out of order in saying that we'll eliminate all the rest of these items because we haven't got decision to act on item 4. And not only did he do that, as you pointed out, that he, but even though they then got a huge amount of time that they had because they skipped the police chief's report. They skipped the discussion of police surveillance policies. They skipped the discussion of the policy recommendations, except for some brief statements by city council members. And yet they would not allow, first they wanted to cut down public comment to 2 minutes each. Then they allowed 3 minutes each. And then when Ed Porter, at the end of the meeting, came up forward, and you'll hear him say this, he said something to the effect of, I'd really like to get your recommendations to get to Bob Aronson. And Sherry wanted to make those recommendations right there and then, while we were all in the same room together. Rotkin did not allow that to happen.
Yeah, and Rico Thunder, who had, when after he heard Ed Porter's comment that he was ready to take input from the public about this thing, brought up the fact that Ed Porter had refused to meet with the parade organizers on the issue.
Right, and it's all, which is also interesting because I think that's the reason Porter then immediately said, "Oh well, let's take comments. Anybody can talk to me, but not now, not in public, not before the media, not at the public safety committee meeting where this thing is supposed to be happening." I'm going to play some more of the meetings so people can hear it. I'm often justly criticized for not proceeding with, I'm kind of giving away all the fun before you get to hear it yourself, but it is kind of a crappy recording. Let's see what we can do here.
So, as a courtesy to people that have taken the trouble to come down here and show up, I'm going to give people a chance to make at least brief comments. But we intend no action as a committee here today because of the situation. And we're going to wait for Mr. Aronson's report. He's involved in many, he's nationally involved in doing audits and investigations of police activity around the country, and has a reputation as someone who works for both the public and for the police in different places. And I think having someone of his integrity involved in this is very important to us as a committee, and I think I can speak for the council as a whole. He's told us that he has other investigations and he's working on in other cities, but that he believes he can get back to us with a report within 30 days. Of course, we would all like it to be faster, but we also, I think, understand now the importance of it being thorough. So there's no guarantee he'll be back in 30 days, but he's going to make his best attempt to do that. And I think we're going to take it as our assumption that within 30 days that we'll get a report back. We'll have, if there's not a committee meeting scheduled appropriately, we'll schedule a special meeting to try and meet quickly after we get his report, and then make a recommendation to the next city council meeting, whatever that's going to be. So this is really, we're looking at about a 30-day period, roughly, until we meet and look at something shortly after that when the council would take action.
So here is Rotkin saying that they're going to now wait another 30 days. Consider this. If Bob Aronson had said, it's a great report, let's go right ahead, then what would have happened supposedly is they would have trotted out the police chief and the vice police chief and gone through this agenda A, B, C, D. But because he said it was incomplete and flawed for the reason that the deputy chief was investigating it, a fact that any 10-year-old could tell you would not lead to an objective report, they're deciding not to do it. One, I would conclude from this that they had that kind of hope that Aronson would go along with this bullshit, would go along with this, we're investigating ourselves and everything is rosy, and that Aronson, however much of a paid city employee is, and he is a paid city employee, and I don't have a lot of regard for what he's been doing in the last few years, but as a professional auditor, you couldn't say, look, you can't investigate yourself, at least send somebody else in the department to investigate the guy who's suspected of wrongdoing. So any, as I said, 10-year-old would know this, and why didn't the city manager know it? Why didn't Mike Rotkin knew it? They knew it. They just felt nobody would notice and nobody would care. That's my view. What do you think, Yo?
Absolutely.
I mean, it is astonishing. And it's not astonishing at all. It's business as usual, but it's astonishing. It is so clearly demonstrated here, the kind of fundamental corruption that we have here in the Santa Cruz City government.
Well, Scary made. I saved the clipping when Scary was
police chief. Scary.
Yeah, when police chief Scary was when it was announced that he was the new police chief, I saved the news clipping where they had this little interview and he talked about. Wanting to have an open department and maintain the public trust and maintain integrity in the department. And here, as if Scary, who's been in police work for how many years? I don't know, 25, 30 years?
Some time, I think.
So, yeah, a long, long time. he should have understood from the beginning that he had a problem, that the investigation just should not, they shouldn't even have attempted to do anything.
But this is something we should even be discussing. And because it is so obvious, it seems to me that they knew it, but they believed that this was such a minor deal that they could pass it off on the public. I mean, all that I'm going to read Robert Aronson's letter now so the public can hear it. But you've got some indication from the news story the next day in the Sentinel. But it's clear that the only real objection, there's a couple of other points in here, but the thing that Aronson was expected to look over a 600-page report by Vogel, and then this whole thing would be processed through this committee in 2 hours and then sent to city council and processed the next day. Because it didn't turn out the way Rotkin wanted, he stopped the whole process. And to me, that's a way of covering for the people who are not only guilty of the original investigative surveillance activities, but the people who are supposed to be investigating them and the people who appointed the people who are supposed to be investigating them. The city manager for life, Dick Wilson. Go ahead.
Yeah, if you wanted to state it succinctly as possible, here's Mike Rotkin as chair of the Public Safety Committee with the agenda. Uh-oh, we'll get back to you later.
Here's the letter from Bob Aronson, dated February 13th, the same day. I regret to say that this internal investigation, for my purposes, is incomplete and flawed for a very predictable reason. It violates one of the most basic investigative precepts by having been compiled and written by the very individual whose decisions are or should be under investigative scrutiny. In my view, the heart of the underlying matter is how and why a unilateral decision was reached to place undercover officers in the last night DIY organizing meetings. Unfortunately, the person who made that decision is now the person who presents his investigation of his own actions. In regards to the decision to insert undercover officers, the investigation is less an independent review of what took place than a rationalization to justify the decision. The first page and a half of the investigation summary contain the discussion of that decision. Rather than the product of investigation, these paragraphs are the investigator's confession of his central role as the initial instigator of all the events that followed. That page and a half demonstrate beyond any doubt that the deputy chief was and should have been disqualified from conducting the investigation into the decision. The deputy chief's decision to utilize undercover officers may or may not have been the most appropriate, but he is certainly unable to impartially investigate it. I am surprised and disappointed that he was assigned to that task. None of the foregoing is meant to suggest that I have or am able to reach any firm conclusion regarding the propriety of using undercover officers in this instance. I remain troubled by the fact that the department made broad, untested assumptions, tantamount to categorical prejudices, about the last night DIY organizers as the basis for inserting an undercover team in their midst. As I have maintained all along, I doubt there has been any misconduct in these underlying actions. On the other hand, the choices made have damaged the department's relationship with a portion of the city's community. This, by the way, should tell you where Aronson's going with this, that he's essentially going to give them he's going to say there are some problems, but, it's not that serious. And the real problem is a public relations one. And I took him up on this later.
Well, it's that portion, that small minority portion of the citizens of Santa Cruz that actually still believe in the Constitution.
Well,
and the First Amendment.
This is a lot.
And we don't have to worry. There's
it's a minor
group of small rabble rousers.
Fanatic.
Rouse,
fanatic
First
type.
Amendment.
Survivalists.
Oh. Quiet.
Yeah, let's get out of there. that fact alone would justify the fact that the choices might have damaged the police department's relationship with a portion of the city's community. That fact alone would justify a creditable, unbiased investigation of how and why those decisions were made. In light of these concerns, I met with the chief of police and the city manager this morning. After some discussion, the city manager directed me to take those investigative steps I deemed necessary to supplement and revise the instant investigation. We have a call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
You are such a naysayer.
Nay, nay, nay.
And I love it. The other, was it Sunday morning, I believe, you were playing a recording that you must have gotten? This is totally off topic, obviously. But there was a guy talking about being a local, a Safeway customer, a loyal Safeway customer, and he knows he's stupid.
That was Richard Quigley. Yeah, he wanted to go sign and said, "I'm stupid. I'm going to have to cut this real short because I don't have a lot of time." But go ahead.
I really want to get a recording of just that.
Okay. Well, remember,
portion.
if you go online, you got to find somebody with a computer. It is archived. So you just got to go to huffsantacruz.org and look for the date of that show, and then just find that part of the show, and you'll be able to hear it, and you'll be able to record it.
And who was that guy?
That was Richard Quigley.
He's hilarious.
He is great.
Isn't he? Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, Richard was a fabulous inspiration to me. I met him on the courthouse steps, and he supported me through my odyssey with the city, and he taught me an awful lot, and between him and Robert, I've learned the value of a portable tape recorder to prove your case when you meet up against these ridiculous charges authorities throw at you.
Right.
A very, very, very important tool that every citizen should have one.
More important than a gun or a hatchet.
I would say, yeah, more effective.
More effective. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Robert Norris. This is Jan Golder. We both were at the Public Safety Committee meeting earlier this week where the City Council swept aside the proposal to have the police chief and other police chief official be asked and answer questions, have the community be present for a discussion on the guidelines for police surveillance. The excuse for all this, according to Rotkin, was... And indeed, Bob Aronson, too, seems to kind of give some kind of support to this, was that Aronson found that the report was biased, was incomplete and flawed. That was the phrase. The significant thing...
Well, and he said that was highly predictable, which was interesting. The first sentence or two, he said it was highly predictable
that
would be flawed.
Highly predictable, almost completely predictable. You cannot... I mean, you expecting somebody to be a saint to investigate themselves? It's ridiculous. But the important thing here again is that here he is. He's saying that.
Robert's having a senior moment here.
I guess so. I don't know. Why don't we just listen to some more while I have my Geritol? Hang on.
I also have in front of me another very brief little comment. I'll just read you the whole thing from the city manager to the city council. The city's independent police officer, Robert Aronson, contacted and met with me this morning. That was this dated this morning, February 13th. Mr. Aronson advised me of his concerns about the report that had been presented to the city council's public safety committee. I accept Mr. Aronson's concerns in full and have therefore authorized Mr. Aronson to conduct a supplementary investigation to remedy his concerns. This will have the unfortunate effect of delaying the completion of the investigation, but it will ensure that the final product is complete, fair, and independent. The City Council Public Safety Committee and the public deserve no less. So basically, Mr. Aronson has been authorized to spend what is necessary for him to follow through with further investigation and auditing of the existing report, whatever additional investigation he feels is necessary before he comes back to us for the final report. So having said all of that, I've combined items number 2, 3, and 4 on our agenda, which are a police report on the events leading up to the New Year's Eve 2005, a discussion of police surveillance policies, and then the discussion of approval of police surveillance policy recommendations. Put those all together. Those are really our only items for this agenda of any substance other than possible communications from council members. And I want to give members of the public an opportunity. I'm going to set the clock at 2 minutes. I really want to encourage people to come back when you actually have a full report to comment on, and it's just before we're going to actually take some kind of action on that report. But please do feel free to come up and share any thoughts that you'd like to. And we'll have there's a little light that comes on. Steve knows how to work this, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It turns green when you can start. It turns yellow when you've got 30 seconds left, and you should wrap up your comments when it turns red. So please come up and share any comments that you'd like to make to us. Because I'm not clear what the purpose of commenting on half an investigation would be at this point. If people feel deeply about this, by the crowd, we'll make it 3 minutes, but I'm not sure what would be served by it. How many people would that have 3 minutes to talk? Okay, well, 3 minutes each.
So there was Rotkin prepared to do a two-minute Matthews on folks and cut them down to 2 minutes. They'd been waiting for several weeks for this meeting. They'd gotten the agenda. They'd seen the city manager okay the police department report, the 600-page report by Vogel, which was then put in the library over the weekend. And here was Rotkin saying, Well, we're going to have only brief comments because we decided to shut everything down because Bob Aronson doesn't really like the report that much. Why would his opinion dictate what that committee does? Why wouldn't there be some independent discussion? I mean, is he God? Does he know everything? Bob doesn't know everything. No, this was cooked up in the city manager's office with Bob, the police chief, and the city manager. And what they decided to do was delay again while they get their story straight. The problem is here, it's not even that. I think they're waiting for the media interest to die down. I mean, there's the primary thing. I mean, and I'm speculating about all this, but it does seem, I mean, there was an agenda, there was a 600-page report, there was a regular public safety committee meeting, and then there was a dissenting opinion from the police auditor who had, he had only a few days to look at the report, but that would have been the case if he'd approved the report. So it's the same thing. If he'd approved the report, this would have just gone speeding right through. I mean, the fact that he disapproved the report might mean you might want even more public discussion of this whole issue. Instead of waiting for his final report, I mean, it obviously, there's no other way for me to interpret this really than as a cover-up if I'm going to be realistic and assess it. Any comments from you, Yon?
Well, I think another reason that they didn't go forward with their discussion about the report, again, all the three council members had the report and had looked at it, is that they were expecting that kind of stamp of approval from Bob.
Of course.
So they probably had all their comments ready to go. Oh well, this looks like a pretty good investigation. I mean, I'm speculating here too, but they had all these corny excuses to not go forward with what they had put on their agenda, and what was essentially their charter to do.
I mean, if there had been some unusual piece of information that Bob Aronson had presented in that letter that said, I have just discovered, you know, here's the smoking gun, here's the flaming torch, here's something you didn't realize before that we're going to have to stop and reconsider, mm-hmm. He presented absolutely no new information whatever. They knew beforehand that the deputy chief was investigating himself. They knew beforehand that Howard Scarry authorized this. They knew beforehand that the city manager authorized Scarry to authorize it, and the city manager approved the report 4 days before. They knew all this stuff.
How did the city manager act giving the investigation of Scarry without the city council? What was the last direction by the city council on this?
I think it was at the January 24th meeting where Tony Madrigal presented a resolution asking for an independent investigator, and instead of that independent investigator, they shoveled the matter over to the Public Safety Committee and to the police department's own so-called internal investigation. And, of course, what they got, instead of a real internal investigation, which would be, you know, an in-house investigation in the police department by another person other than Vogel, they got Vogel investigating himself. I mean, you know, it's...
So Madrigal did ask for an independent investigation, and then
he asked for an independent investigation.
Was his motion voted? Do you remember his?
It was voted down 5-2. Well, the independent investigation was independent in a certain sense, but the city manager would have appointed the investigator. I mean, he didn't specify he wanted certain parameters that would make it so that there would be a certain select group from which the city manager could appoint people, so he couldn't appoint some shill who would just proceed to rubber stamp what was done. And again, this may look like Bob Aronson is the big hero of the hour, you know, that he's not rubber stamping, and indeed he is not. But he's not rubber stamping because if he's noticed anything unusual in the report, he just kind of said, well, you know, I can't really sign off. Because somewhere down the line, somebody's going to say, you okayed a report where the chief criminal investigated his own criminal behavior. You can't do that. Now, when I say criminal, I want to clear about this. Vogel has not been convicted of any crime. He's a nice guy. I like him, Kevin Vogel. The person accused of wrongdoing, let me put it that way. I'm actually now going to play some more of this. What we've got now is Sherry Connable, who's an activist who's spoken up loudly on this issue, and properly so. Thank you, Sherry, for your work on this. Saying to Rotkin, hold it. You're going to give us 2 minutes each after you're cutting back the entire meeting. You know, are you saying you don't have the time to do it? And he's saying, well, it's not really relevant because we don't have the final report. The issue, of course, is the community input into this and the community's ability to talk to itself through the media. When the media was there, he's trying to manipulate and cut short this process when it's obvious that what's going down here is, if not a fast cover-up, I mean, it's hard to see anything other than a fast cover-up going down here, because Rotkin also knew that Vogel was investigating himself. He didn't cry foul. He was all prepared to go ahead and give this one a rubber stamp if Bob Aronson said it was okay.
All of those politicians knew enough. All those council members knew enough to say that it was not the appropriate thing to do. Though the police chief never got back to the city manager or the council and told them of his problem.
I'm looking in the Sentinel here to try to find city manager's comments. While I do, I'm going to play some of the public comment that really was on target. Let's hear some of that public comment.
Give a second to set the clock. Again, understand, we're not taking any action in this meeting. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Rotkin, and thank you, Mr. Aronson. I will talk briefly. Mr. Aronson has pretty much said, in better words than I have,
Rico
my fears about
speaking.
Internal investigation. As you consider, as the results of Mr. Aronson's investigation become public, as you consider new recommendations for a policy, I'd just like to keep a couple things in mind. The policy that we did get out of the Santa Cruz Police Department was sort of a hastily assembled one-page policy dealing with undercover surveillance that provides no protection for people's rights. So here's some things to keep in mind. The details of the 600-page report released to the public on Friday reveal a pattern of abuses, including spying on parade organizers, spying on other unrelated groups and First Amendment activities, and profiling organizers and other unrelated people. So the Santa Cruz PD used their presence at the planning meetings to gather information about community groups and First Amendment activities taking place. They used this information to monitor events and tip off other outside agencies, as well as introduce them into the police records database. I think that the Santa Cruz Police, the city council, and city managers are exposing the city to potential lawsuits. And so without a policy that looks at First Amendment activities in a way that protects people's rights, I think that it's insufficient. So the policy that exists now, that's now in place, it gives the SCPD the green light to monitor any type of civil disobedience or peaceful group if they felt that a member of the group planned to break any law. That's not sufficient. It's not sufficient in a town that respects civil disobedience. So, a draft ordinance limiting police powers and offering strong protections of First Amendment activities has been presented to the Santa Cruz City Council. It's the San Francisco Police Department's policy, general order, on dealing with all First Amendment activities. And we'd ask you to consider that as a basis as you're looking at policy for Santa Cruz. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Other members of the public, please come up.
I didn't have much time. My name is Catherine Gunderson. Hello. I've kind of gotten some thoughts together. And are we going to, if we speak today, will we not be able to speak when you... Okay, thank you.
On behalf of everybody else here, as well as the council members, obviously, if you have big points you need to make at the next meeting, wait until the next meeting is closer to what we're going to have, but please feel free to share with us anything you'd like to step in.
I think I will save most of my stuff, but I want to start out by...
And I've got a comment. Rotkin had the item removed from the city council the next day, so she didn't have a chance to comment the next day either. I mean, she had a chance to comment today, but Rotkin did not clarify here, at least in this commentary, that there would be no item number 35, which was the police surveillance item, the next day on the Tuesday City Council meeting in the afternoon, of course, so people, again, would not have much opportunity to attend. Though I've got to say that Mayor Cynthia Matthews, when I interviewed her yesterday, did say that they were holding meetings in the afternoon so that people were not so tired late at night and that they were trying to have it as late in the afternoon as possible so people could leave work at 5 o'clock and come to the meeting. I wasn't persuaded that this shouldn't have been put on an evening agenda where people could actually attend. Continuing. You're listening to the Public Safety Committee meeting of Tuesday, actually of Monday of this week, and you're listening to public comment that was reluctantly allowed by Councilmember Mike Rodkin.
I don't like the trend that's happening with the anti-terrorism kind of stuff going on, and this is like a microcosm, it seems to me, of what's going on nationwide with the federal, with being able to use terrorism and anti-terrorism as a reason to do anything you want to do, basically. And it's happening nationwide, and that you know, the disgust, the disappointment, the grief that's going on, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, with feeling helpless with what our government is doing, what a lot of the corporations are doing, and not having any kind of real news coverage about it with the corporate media. So most people don't know what's going on, and it makes a lot of us feel helpless to be able to do much about it. So having Art and Revolution and Last Night Santa Cruz and that kind of thing, be able to express in a comedic sort of way with puppets, whatever, is a real healthy thing. I'm probably speaking to the choir here. You probably understand this. And so I really would like to see more just honest communication. I had no idea it would get to this point where there were spies in meetings, you know, and from the police department. And that it's a, you know, it's a the philosophy of groups like Art and Revolution is nonviolent, and just to try to get people to think more. And I'll save the rest of my comments for next time. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Please come up. Good afternoon.
Hi, I'm Sherry Connable. Thanks for the 3 minutes. We just had a chance to read Mr. Aronson's statement, and I really think it's a wonderful statement, and thank you very much for having issued that on behalf of the community. I have here an email that I sent to you all about 2 weeks ago, and I had this conversation by email with Mr. Aronson as well, and he explained to me today that because it wasn't that he didn't believe what I was saying to him, but he didn't have firsthand documentation in front of him, so he didn't really feel like he could take action. And what it draws attention to is the fact that Deputy Chief Fogle had been assigned to head the investigation, and said there was clearly a conflict, and I was asking him 2 weeks ago to take serious steps to intervene. Now we're 2 weeks down the road. We have in front of us a product that's very expensive, that represents a lot of public resources. The infiltration of last night DIY represents the expenditure of a lot of public resources. We're now going to pay our police auditor to do yet another investigation and use more resources. And I think we sort of need that piece to make people feel more safe and more confident. I don't really disagree with your conclusion here today. I've entered into the public record a request that... I disagree with your conclusion about action. I've entered into the public record a request that you begin consideration of the San Francisco Police Department General Order governing police practices related to First Amendment activities. Emily Riley has done the same. Whatever comes out of Mr. Aronson's investigation, and I hope it will be something we can have more trust in, this community, I think, at this point needs a very strong policy with very firm guidelines and definitions governing how the police relate to the First Amendment and generally to constitutional rights. And I don't think you need to delay that process. We're going to need that in any event. And I think you can begin that. And you can begin it here, and you can begin it tomorrow. It's obviously not going to get finished. But there's no reason to wait another 30 days to decide that, yes, we need a really strong policy here in Santa Cruz that protects people's civil rights. So I encourage you to move forward.
And I think that's the gap that the community has been feeling. It seems as if the council has been reticent to step into the driver's seat. And I understand you wanted to give the department a chance to do their investigation. We now have an opinion. They've not done a very good job. But I encourage you to really move forward very strongly. Thank you.
Hey, public safety committee members, members of the public. Sherry is obviously right on this one, clearly. But what's interesting to me is, I mean, I think that Bob Aronson's conclusion is a no-brainer. Obviously, any council worth half its salt or city manager who wasn't up to his ears in this stuff wouldn't have appointed the very individual involved in this up to his neck to investigate himself. And it seems outrageous to me that you are now, you in essence, you knew about this, you knew what was going on, now you're coming here and closing down any further action on this, delaying it again until we get another report on this issue, when you have all kinds of documentation of the kinds of abuses and concerns we have. There is no policy. That's one of the justifications that Police Chief Scarry has used to say, or Vogel has used to say, it's okay, we have no policy, so no policy was violated. We obviously need a policy now. We need a freeze on all undercover surveillance activities of political groups declared by the City Council tomorrow night, at least pending any further action. Because what the community is obviously concerned about, and as I'm sure as a board member of the American Civil Liberties Union, that Chair Rotkin here, or the chair, I'm not sure, is concerned about this as well, or should be. And if you're not, and frankly, it seems like you're not, because you're all set to delay this again, the community has to do something to make you concerned about it. Exposés in the San Francisco Chronicle about use of force in San Francisco make me skeptical that even the proposal by Emily Riley from the 1999 guidelines is something we necessarily want to follow. We have to know what's happening up in San Francisco and need to contact those groups up there and bring them down here to investigate. But beginning now is obviously the thing to do. And you have some people who exposed this information to you, who brought it to you as a community service, who risked disfavor with the police department for doing that. And you're telling them, well, wait another month without any kind of protections, is what you're saying. This is wrong, and I think it's clearly wrong. I'm also concerned that a supplementary investigation by Bob Aronson, well-meaning and nice a fellow as he is, and as much as I'd like to see anything that comes out of it, we haven't seen anything out of Bob Aronson in 2 years. It's all been secreted away by this council. Based upon your killing of the Citizens Police Review Board 2 or 3 years ago, you're not interested in having independent police investigations around this issue. That we should know, we do know. So I think that what the community has to do is take the bull by the horns and essentially hold your feet to the fire here. I don't think it's going to happen from you. But obviously what you need to do is what's been proposed now. Continue this process as quickly as possible. Freeze undercover surveillance on political protests until there is a policy in place. And really look to reestablish oversight of the police department. We've seen that police departments are out of control, whether it's San Jose or San Francisco. You think Santa Cruz is a shining exception? I don't think so. Thank you.
Others who want to speak, please come up.
John Golder. I'm coming for two reasons. One, I know the people well who planned this event. I was in the event. I was proud to be in the event. I thought it was a benefit and great for Santa Cruz. But this reminds me of the incident I went through, and I just want to reflect on that, what happened in that case, because many of the same issues were involved. A legitimate records request that I made to the city got mixed up with an incident where the Santa Cruz police seized two of my vehicles. Santa Cruz police lied about that incident. Ex-Chief Belcher lied in writing about that incident, about an investigation having been done. I was denied by due process by the police as well as by Attorney Barisoni. City manager, the city tried to get an injunction against me, and City Manager Wilson perjured himself on the stand about his knowledge of the incident, and I have absolute proof of that. And headquarters witnessed a part of that process. There was a civil stipulation made in that case, which Barisoni reneged on. 25 requests were supposed to be answered, 5 a month, and only 3 out of 25 were answered in my request. Bob Aronson tried to several times tried to investigate what went on, could find no records of the CPRB investigations. And when I finally got through to internal affairs on this investigation, using the Records Act, California Records Act, myself about it, I got through to, I believe it was Sergeant Clark at the time, who was internal affairs officer, and I asked him, I said, how could the, what happened to this investigation? Because I'd finally gotten something in writing. And he said, Chief Belcher, change your investigation request to an oral inquiry. I said, well, what does that mean? You know, what happened? He said, well, he just, that means they just ask a few oral questions and that's the end of it. I said, well, how can you do that? And this is a verbatim quote from the sergeant. He can do any damn thing he wants to. It's his police department. Now, I told Emily Riley that in a personal meeting. And she was shocked. But she never did anything about it. And none of you council people did anything about it. You all got extensive, detailed letters about the situation. So what I'm saying here is I went through every legal process I could. I used every possible means I could to direct something. And I was this small fry deal. You know, vehicles get seized every week in Santa Cruz. This is a big-time deal. This is our First Amendment rights. All right? I'm telling the public, I'm telling the media, don't trust the city process. Get in there and find out for yourself whether it's happening right. I would like Bob to stand up and tell us exactly what he's allowed to reveal to us, because he tried to explain to me, and I never did quite understand it, that he wasn't allowed to actually reveal anything about what he found out. Okay? Thank you.
Hi, Christopher Crone. I'm a little bit miffed as to what's going on here, folks. I think another delay really hurts the community and where the community's at. 30 days is a long time, and I don't think the civil rights of Santa Cruzans can wait 30 more days, and I would urge you to begin crafting a policy now. The paper said on Saturday, police probe clears Santa Cruz officers, and I remember a certain headline in the San Francisco Chronicle, if Chronicle was really raked over the coals by, about the miners that were found alive. And I'm not going to blame at all, I don't always agree, or most of the time it's hard for me to agree with some of the things that come out of the Sentinel. But this one, I feel like the Sentinel was used. It took us, members of the public, a while to get a hold of this report. But yet the Sentinel got the story pretty early. And the police got their headline. Police probe clears Santa Cruz officers. And then I come in today, excuse me, and read Bob Aronson's first line, I regret to say that the internal investigation for my purposes has been complete and flawed for a very predictable reason. It violates one of the most basic investigative precepts by having been compiled and written by the very individual whose decisions are, should be, under investigative scrutiny. I'm fairly certain that that folks from the community have met with most of the council members. And in those meetings, I'm fairly certain that we came up with this notion. But yet, I left work early today, as did some other folks, to come here because a meeting was scheduled for the Public Safety Committee and because we're going to have this on the agenda. 30 days is a long time. The civil rights of Santa Cruz residents cannot wait. The council needs to begin crafting a policy now. I would like to hear from all of you your thoughts today, because 30 days is a long time. The civil rights of Santa Cruz residents cannot wait. Begin crafting a policy now. And if you could also speak to why the council does or does not need to craft a policy and an ordinance that not only protects people's civil rights in letter, but you need to send a signal that there is protection in spirit as well. Thank you.
Anyone else in comments?
Hi, my name is Grant Wilson. Thank you for being here. I
fact, you just brought a copy of the, I think it's somewhere between 300 and 600 page document from the police department, which you have copies of. But I really do agree with what Christopher just said in terms of it would, I think we all would love it if you took some courageous initiative and really took a leadership role rather than waiting for the police to come up with it. Just kind of the wheels to move slowly, because it feels like the wheels are moving slowly. I want you to be prudent in the decisions you make, but I think people are right in that, you know, I feel like this is the problem. This is, you know, how much, I think by silence, sometimes we are just wasting human, certainly we're wasting money in terms of the time and energy that it took to put this together. And, I mean, what we're proposing as a solution is a 12-page document, or at least something modeled on something like a 12-page document that the San Francisco Police Department has that's very clear about the protocol and the what is needed in order to be clear and correct as in terms of undercover operations. So I would really encourage you to speak to that. I think it would be really wonderful and courageous if as members of the City Council, you or Public Safety Commission, to basically put, when this comes up on the agenda, you know, whether it's in a week or 2 weeks or 4 weeks, to put it on the evening agenda. I know when this first happened, people have to leave work to get to this meeting or to an afternoon City Council meeting, and I think it would really be respectful of public concern if it was put on the evening agenda. And I guess I'm just really, well, I'm sorry that the police, no members of the police are here today, and we weren't aware of that until maybe about an hour ago at most, that I just wish that they would really listen to the public and the concerns of the public as well, and that it wouldn't have to be just to go through you. I think our concerns, too, are not just the behavior of undercover officers and whether that was correct or incorrect, but really what was the policy that directed that, what was the action of their superiors, and whether there's a larger pattern of this kind of thing happening. I continue to have a very difficult time imagining that this was the greatest threat that the local police department had in the past 3 to 5 years in terms of community groups. And this was they told us, and I think told you, that this is a one-time only thing that they've done. I find that very hard to believe. And I still feel like they were telling you things that they attempted to contact you multiple times and were refused by us, and that's simply not true, and now they've said that. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Hi, I'm David Sweet. I think there's an issue of trust and an issue of pride here. I'm a political dissident. I'm an activist. I attend half a dozen meetings a week of people who are trying to change something about this society. And it's important to me and to be able to trust the public authorities not to exercise covert vigilance on those activities. I'm never involved in any activities aimed at violence or the destruction of property or harming other persons, but I can't trust the government of my country to be respectful of my right to engage in these activities. Increasingly, all through my lifetime, and especially culminating in the current regime in Washington, I have good reason to think that my government is deeply suspicious of the activities of people like me. Now, the pride question is that I have been living in Santa Cruz for 35 years, and I've come to be very proud to be a Santa Cruzan. I've become proud of the stands that my city takes on a whole variety of issues and has for a very long time. I think of my community as a beacon to the whole country about the conduct of its public affairs. So I would like to be as proud of being a Santa Cruzan with regard to Santa Cruz's way of dealing with the ever greater threat of the invasion of the spaces within which we exercise our rights as citizens, as I am of so many other things about Santa Cruz. So I think we have an opportunity here not only to look through the San Francisco ordinance and the Seattle ordinance and so forth, find the best practices that there are in the most progressive communities, but maybe even to forge something new and improved upon in the way of exercising the power of the city council to tell the police department precisely what it needs to do, what it's expected to do, in order to guarantee the safety of the exercise of our First Amendment rights as citizens in this city. And I'm counting on you to do that. I'm counting on you to make me proud, make me as proud of Santa Cruz in this regard as I am in so many others, and to restore the somewhat shredded fabric of my trust in the Santa Cruz police.
And that was David Sweet, who I believe is on the is an ACLU member, and who was one of the few people at this rather scantily attended meeting, the Public Safety Committee meeting on Monday. I'm running into time problems. I know I had promised to have a longer interview by Bob Aronson. Unfortunately, that's been a little bit preempted here by the fact that I did interview Mayor Matthews yesterday on a long series of other subjects. At the end of that interview, I got into the Spygate thing, and I want to play that before this hour is up. So on Sunday, I will be resuming this tape. And again, the time schedule probably, let's see what we got here. 10 o'clock, I've got the Matthews interview. We'll finish up the Public Safety Committee meeting, then do the whole Matthews interview. Much of it people may not find too exciting. And then later, and we'll continue with the Downtown Commission's loitering law. Don't loiter in those parking lots, folks, particularly if you're ragged. That's the latest bit of chicanery and cruelty coming up from the City Council, one of the city agencies. Here's Mayor Matthews, who gave me the first interview of my life. In fact, she has never... maybe once returned a phone call to me. This was quite shocking to me that she agreed to this, and I will talk more about this on Sunday, my speculation and my commentary. Here she is talking about Spygate. Mayor Matthews, Cynthia Matthews of Santa Cruz.
Last night at City Council, based upon emails that I saw retrieved by an ACLU Public Records Act request from Rico Thunder about the Spygate situation around surveillance of the last night DIY event, I said that I was concerned about your involvement in this, and you clarified the situation publicly by stating that you only had, as I understand it, and I want you to correct me if I'm wrong, you had offered your assistance in this matter, but the impression you gave me was you were not aware that this was going on in terms of the surveillance, or am I misstating that?
No, you're absolutely right. I had no idea that it was going on. I received numerous emails. I'm a subscriber on the Santa Cruz Progressive email list, and got numerous emails about the planning meetings for the last night do-it-yourself parade.
Were you there, by the way, for the parade?
I went down. I waited for it. There were three different posted starting times, and I had my young grandson with me, and we waited for about an hour, and it didn't show up, so we left. I mean, I did go down.
That's good planning for you.
Anyway, I tried to see it. Just out of curiosity, I always go downtown for New Year's. And your question was how much I knew in advance. Nothing. I got these emails about the parade. They included notices to the extent that there will be stilt walkers and fire throwers and, you know, come on down, and we don't intend to get any permits. So that raised to me what I consider a legitimate concern about public safety. And so I forwarded one of those notices to the police chief, said, what do you know about this? I would be happy to be, I don't know the exact wording, I don't have it in front of me, but the drift of it was, I'd be happy to be involved informally in finding out or you know, finding out what's going on. My intention was I'd be happy to pick up the phone and call these people and ask them what they're planning to do. I never heard anything back. I figured they had it under control, end of story. I was not in any way either aware or involved in the undercover operation.
If you had been, if the police chief had called you back and said, "Madam Mayor, there's been some concern about this and we're planning some undercover operatives," would you have objected?
I would have asked for more information. It's pretty hypothetical at this point.
It happened, right?
I don't want to get into speculation.
The recent controversy about the actual Spygate incident, this is the last question I'm going to ask you, the investigation of this being done by Kevin Vogel, the deputy police chief, about his own essential operation, was one that you were aware of was going on, right? You were aware that this investigation of this whole thing was happening in the last few weeks.
Yes.
Did you find that, should we say, peculiar to have a deputy chief investigating his own behavior?
It was the best we could do under the circumstances, I know for sure you're well aware that there was a very strong desire from the community to have a rapid investigation and response. The other deputy chief happened to be on extended vacation, and this was the call that was made. We had said all along that following that internal investigation, it would be reviewed by our police auditor with whom we contract, Bob Aronson. He, in looking at it, felt that it did need an independent eye, and he's going ahead and doing that. So I think, you know, with very limited resources, we were trying to be responsive to the public desire for speed. It probably shouldn't, in retrospect, have been handled that quickly. We probably should have waited, but we are, in any event, having it reviewed by our independent auditor, and we'll see what he says.
There are some who call for a freeze on all surveillance of peaceful political groups pending your establishment of specific guidelines. I know that Howard Scarry last weekend, your police chief, has come down with some guidelines, but a number of critics, I'm among them, don't feel they're adequate. What do you think of Scarry's guidelines, or what do you think of the idea of a freeze?
I think the chief's guidelines are responsive to the desires that have been raised by the community. I will just reiterate that the attendance by out of uniform officers at the planning meeting for the parade was not because of political content, but because it was a planned event without a permit, and we do have a permit process in the city of Santa Cruz. So that was the nature for the police interest in finding out what was happening. It was not whether they were discussing the war in Iraq or whatever. It was the widely publicized intent to promote an event on one of the busiest nights of the year without any contact with either our permit process or our public safety personnel. So I think it's a somewhat different animal than what you're describing.
So should anybody who's planning an event without a permit be ready for the possibility that you would have no objection to there be undercover officers at this time involved in that process?
That's quite a reach.
Well, I'm just wondering. I mean, I say no. I mean,
I think you've extrapolated beyond the limits of what we've been talking about here.
So we needn't worry that undercover officers will be involved in an event, even if, let's say, a permit is required and people are not applying for a permit. Because, as you know, in Santa Cruz, people historically don't apply for permits other than those who have the money to pay for the liability insurance and so forth.
No, I think you're quite incorrect. In many cases, permits are very straightforward. Of course, if you want to close down a street, that does require some permit fee, but that process is widely used by groups as diverse as the Santa Cruz High basketball team, the Gay Pride Parade, the Downtown Association Christmas Parade, the United Nations Association Parade. I mean, throughout the year, we have street closures, we have parades, we have events. We try very hard to work with community groups, be reasonable, and bring forth events that are fun for the community, meaningful to their sponsors, and safe.
So, again, if a group organizes without a permit, should they be prepared to expect the possibility? And is it something that you would approve of, that there will be an undercover officer there examining the situation if they are not, in that sense, strictly legal? In terms of this permit situation, we're not talking about planning to bomb the city hall or anything.
If people are planning an event of the magnitude and in a location that typically requires a permit, they should be responsible for taking the initiative to get the permit.
Will undercover officers be okay to be in that situation?
You're leading me down a path that I'm not going to go on. Robert.
You don't want to say yes or no.
I've laid out very clearly what the responsibilities of the organizers are.
What about the responsibilities of the police? That's what I'm wondering. Will the police be allowed to do this?
I think Howard has set out a very straightforward policy that deals with that. Howard Scarry, our police chief.
And, again, I'm asking you, given that situation I just gave you, would should we expect that is at least a possibility to happen? Or should we say, no, not for the next few months, don't worry about that? In other words, I'm trying to give people a reasonable expectation of what to look forward to. Are undercover officers still okay coming into a situation like DIY last night? If they are, then we should know that. You know, I mean, that's a reasonable position that a person can hold in the views of some. Is that a reasonable position, is my question to you.
This is a leading and hypothetical question.
What happens? It already happened. It's not hypothetical anymore. Okay, so you don't want to say anything more about this. I am putting you on the spot, Cynthia. I know that.
You're not putting me down. Listen, I think this is not a productive conversation. You can draw whatever extrapolated conclusions you want to from this. I'm trying to be helpful. I'm trying to meet with you.
And I appreciate it. And you understand my role here is, as much as I like to be friendly with you, I also have some responsibility to the community to ask you hard questions, and that's why I'm doing that.
Yeah, and I think I've laid out the issues.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to repeat it, and I appreciate your having spent time with us, and I hope to meet with you on a subsequent point on some homeless issues, similar to what Bob was talking about, but more specifically because we do have this parking lots and garages 10-minute loitering stuff coming out. You're probably aware of that, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so... thank you, Cynthia. We're talking to Cynthia Matthews, Mayor of Santa Cruz. Anything you want to say that you were not able to say that you want the community to be able to hear?
I think we've covered the waterfront here.
Thanks, Cynthia. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Bob.
I'd like to leave you.
And that was Mayor Cynthia Matthews yesterday in her office. She also advised me to let members of the community know that she is open for interviews, or not interviews, but I should say discussion, and she will meet with you. She doesn't have a regular meeting time, but if you get in touch with her office, she keeps her own calendar, and I'll be playing more of the actual... I'll be playing a longer interview, which lasts another half hour. It's not as exciting as this. I mean, she actually... She kept ducking the question, as far as I'm concerned. I think it's quite revealing what she was saying and what she was not saying. But there's a lot of other things that we talked about, mainly about city council process. I'll be coming back on Sunday, 9:30. The Matthews interview should start around 10, although it'll be delayed, as I said before, because I want to finish up the Public Safety Committee meeting and give you the Bob Aronson interview that happened after the Public Safety Committee meeting. I kind of buttonholed him with the other reporters outside, and we chatted. And I also have a brief segment of a phone conversation. Bob, I left Bob a message yesterday, or I think it was yesterday, maybe it was yesterday, regarding a couple of other things, actually one other issue, and he responded to that. I'll play that as well on Sunday. I'm sorry to be kind of making this schedule... kind of mixing and matching as I go. Unfortunately, that is what's going down, and I guess that's what you're going to have to put up with, but hopefully you'll get some useful information out of it anyway. For those who want to hear this particular show again or want to check it out, you can review it at huffsantacruz.org. That's a website for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. I'm also grateful to Vinny Lombardo, who called in and pointed out to me that the tape was pretty crappy and could be improved by hooking up with the internal connections to the city council sound system. I found that to be problematic for me, but maybe my machine is improved or their system is improved. Maybe we can get a better tape in the future. Also, we'll be playing more of the Downtown Commission hearing, which in which, as I said, there was a significant victory by homeless advocates in delaying this nasty get out in the rain, old guys move along faster, no more than 10 minutes loitering or we'll give you a $100 plus citation. It's bullshit, and it's coming at us. And if you want to refer to, if you want to get in touch with Mayor Matthews, give her a call, 420-5020. If you have any concerns about this, because her position clearly is, seems to be that Howard Scarry's guidelines are just fine with her. And those guidelines are, in essence, you may remember, that if they're looking at a meeting where any illegal activity or violent activity by any, either the group or any individual member is involved in any way, they are reserving the right to surveil. And that means any meetings that involve civil disobedience, any meetings that involve being there without a permit, maybe violating the downtown ordinances by sitting down, which could, that could conceivably happen. I think we have gotten a statement from Cynthia Matthews that, you know, she is going to trust the police department here. And I think we've found, many of us have found, that you can't trust the police department. And we need to do is have some real independent review and some real citizen action, because clearly the city manager, the police chief, the mayor, the city council are all interested in burying this issue, this stinking corpse, as rapidly as possible. And that's what they're doing. And the way they're doing it is when the media are present, they call off the meetings and they say, we need a full report. And they hold meetings in the afternoon rather than in the evening. They refuse to have an independent investigation. They are so arrogant or so complacent that they will allow an obviously defective investigation by the very individual who is under suspicion. And Matthews went along with this. I didn't, you know, lash her about it as I'm doing on the air, but obviously she needs to be lashed. Because if this is what we got, we have a police department running the city. That's no news to most of us, but obviously it's not the way democratic government is supposed to work. And the way we change it is by shouting about it, speaking about it, organizing about it, petitioning about it, maybe getting together an initiative about it that will change this situation. Because I'll tell you, waiting for Bob Aronson's report is a waste of time. We need to take action very quickly. I understand people like Grant Wilson are planning actions. Could be even illegal actions. I'm assuming that they're not illegal. There are meetings of the follow up on this Spygate situation. I believe you can get involved. Go to indiebay.org to get more information about this, to check it out. I have my very patient co-host here who's probably... he's gotten in, what, 10 or 12 words? Well, he's a bit more than that in the course of this discussion. But I'm hoping we can get him back here on Sunday to actually talk about his own experiences with the Santa Cruz City Police Department and then with the bureaucracy in trying to hold both the Santa Cruz City Police Department, the parking authority, different city agencies responsible. Of course, the response of the city manager is to have him arrested, thrown in jail, faced with criminal charges, given a civil injunction. You got a lot of shit thrown at you, Yon.
Oh, don't make me relive that, Robert.
And you're back with your little hatchet and your pooch. I've got to say, some activists just won't go away. And, you know, there are a lot of people that are like that. Uncle Dennis should be coming in very quickly from the cream to the dregs. And that's, in fact, he's breaking down the door even as we speak. God. Shocking all of us with his violent and possibly illegal tactics. Where is the police department when you need them? That's what
I
say.
Get off the air, Robert.
Exactly.
Get off the air right now.
See what I mean? The guy is—he's out of control. You know, I mean, we need some police officers in here. Yon, can you call the 911 while we're waiting here?
Robert, might I remind you that jeopardizing the station's security is a grounds for getting booted out of the station?
I'm cowering here. I'm cowering. I want you to know that. Anyway, next time I will be coming back to do some more cowering. Will be Sunday, 9:30 in the morning. You can call me between times with sneers and comments at 423-4833. Yon, any comments?
Yeah, I look forward to Robert's next comment. Robert is the chewing gum on the shoe of city government.
Hey, I'm it's a sticky situation. Thanks for being.
Like the bird dropping on the
always a friendly comment from my talk show host pal. You're not even a talk show host.
Not a talk show host.
No, but you do a lot of talking for a non-talk show host.
Talk show host.
No, certainly. Well, you should, maybe you should get into it. I mean, we need more good talk show hosts. Thanks.
Well, we need one. Yeah,
well, what do you mean? I'm not even going to get into that. You'll learn about Earth first. You'll learn about other things from Uncle Dennis, who's actually a bit too modest here. He does inform the community on a number of issues, as well as play some of your favorite tunes. I haven't got anything that's ready to go, Dennis. You wanted to throw something on there? I'm going to leave it to you. I don't know what that is, actually. It might be something in here. Let's see what we got. It's weird shit is what it is.
I can put on something better than weird shit.
And we're going to get it. So here comes Uncle Dennis. Thanks for being with me. Get back to me again on Sunday. And thanks for listening. It's archived at huffsantacruz.org in case you haven't had enough of this and want to hear it again.
I'm sure. untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire. The time to hesitate is through. No time to wallow in the mire. Try now, we can only lose. And our love become a funeral pyre. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night.